good way of that, so.
For the community church?
We're going to spend about like 5 minutes, so if you're afraid to meet your neighbor,
Did your Starbucks?
Oh, that's horrible. I already said that. Oh,
really?
I just dropped it in.
Okay. Because you have to stream mine right now? Okay. So you want to just hang on?
We got to review what we're going to say.
I know. I heard that.
A kind of recycling.
You guys ready? So we need Kelly and Emma.
I think we're going to get this started. I'm going to start by handing out this little thing. You are attending Bill's Red. If you're in the wrong room, but you want to learn about kind of what we do in kind of countercultural movement building, that's what you're here for. Thank you guys all for coming out. My name is Will. I run Complacent Nation. This is Reverend Billy of the Church of Stop Shopping. Stop at Jerky, Church of Stop Shopping. And Callie, aka Swoon. I'll be here a couple months later. A little disheveled. We kind of like got this together just like in the last minute. But what we're going to talk about today is counterculture movement building, right? What's good, what's bad, what's ugly, how we do it. And our goal is really to not like just talk to you guys about the shit that we've done, but like really like get you guys excited about the stuff that you can do. Right? The stuff isn't complex. It's about creative culture building, culture movement, everything, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, we are as much experts as you are, right? So we want to, at the end of it, have a discussion where we're all kind of, like, vibing on, like, what's new, what's relevant, what's good about, like, creative kind of protest and how we can do it better and more in the future. I'm going to start off, then Callie's going to talk about her post-term work, and then Phil and Savitri are going to talk about the kind of stuff that they do. So, as I mentioned, my name is Will. I run this project called Complacent Nation, easycomplacent.org. It's, I don't even know how to describe it. There's video in the background, got some like previous actions that are happening. It's all going to kind of like change and get bigger and more interesting, I hope, in the next couple weeks, actually. We're launching the website. Basically, where this thing came from is out of Reclaim the Streets, it's involved in a lot of street party protests back in the day. I'm trying to create interesting protest movements that are going to engage younger people and like getting excited about, you know, trying to change their circumstance, change their context, change their world about, you know, partying in the streets, you know, combining that with like really sincere, really specific kind of mission-oriented stuff, such as saving the gardens, protesting the GA, protesting the WTO, and those things. Out of that, I realized something very key in what's kind of happening in the world right now. As we were like getting arrested and protested in the street, there are people in their Gap jeans and their like, Starbucks coffees looking at us and being like, well, that's kind of interesting. And then they just go on their day, right? What I realized, like, there's nothing, we can't really change, we can't really evolve anything without, like, a cultural element to it, right? Culture right now is contented to a fault. In fact, the definition of complacent is self-satisfied to a fault. And what that's about is like we have so much success and excess in this country. We have like so much, just so much of too much that we don't need to care about anything. I mean, how much do we really need to care about, you know, the global economic, you know, exploitation of third world nations? How much do we need to care about the exploitation of workers in the global south? Right? We don't really need to care about any of that because our culture is so thick with excesses that we can just watch TV, we can drink our coffee, we can wear our jeans, and be completely contented. We don't even need to see kind of beyond that. And what complacent came from is trying to both use and abuse and take over some of the traditional advertising methods and models to touch people in the way that people are used to being touched. We take over advertising with stickers. We take over the streets with money drops or parties. We take over people's mind space with you know, legal events and spaces and like events that kind of get people excited, get people to like turn off MTV and turn on to like something different, and hopefully, you know, in the long term, people start getting like energized about being like really involved in something bigger than themselves, you know, progressive movement building. And all of it, the intention is to build all of it towards like something, you know, really sincere, really like working with community-based groups and everything else. And if you follow this for a while, you'll see it more as it's coming along. There's a real progression towards like trying to build people from like, I have no idea what I want to get involved with, to being like, went to the scope party, over the street, saw a sticker on a billboard, to being like involved in like local community building, which is like kind of, I think, the greatest thing we could possibly do. So with that, I've done a few stunts in the past, just like a quick review. Like, it all started in 99, I guess, with a party called Feel, which raised a few thousand dollars by just bringing people out, you know, just getting people excited about partying. Everyone had to come to the party with $7 and $1 bills, right? Had to bring exact change or you couldn't get it. And no one really knew why it was. Like, strange. We drained all of Williamsburg, it's a party in Williamsburg, between all of Williamsburg of all their change, and people, you know, couldn't get it anymore. You know, it's a great party, it's really fun, and people were excited, and got the mailing list, and everything's really cool. But it wasn't until like a week later that the real reason for the party like manifested. And Mark Reed and others were there to help out, and it was the inaugural action of Complacent.org, which was to go out into Herald Square on Buying Nothing Day, the biggest shopping day of the year, the day after Thanksgiving, and climb up on a street, whatever, it's phone booth thing, and a huge bag full of $2,000 and $1 bills, each one stamped with the word satisfied ? On the website address. And I tossed that to the crowd. And that was the video you saw earlier. And it was an action for a couple purposes. One, to just like create that moment of sheer like intensity, anxiety, insanity, exuberation, exhilaration, everything else. Where people are going to stop between like Toys R Us and Macy's, grab these falling dollars, and like struggle and fight, as you kind of seen in the video, and like look at it and be like, satisfied. I mean, I just knocked over an old lady for $2 and the idea was just like, I mean, it was abrupt and it was dangerous and it was hopefully maybe interesting. The idea was to kind of like both challenge myself and like doing something like really way out of line with like, you know, what I would normally do in a normal day. Also challenge like everyone around me, just be like, you know, just take a moment and like let's think about like this consumer holiday. Let's think about what we're doing. Let's engage each other. Let's like, you know, let's challenge each other. Let's like shock it up a little bit. And that was the first action. From there, we've done a lot of parties, some parties in the subway trains, taking over public spaces and like reminding people about kind of what you can do in real life, in real time, how to engage people in ways that people don't expect. I did a huge banner drop, which I have a video, but I'm not going to show it. huge Ashcroft banner on Houston Street. It was 40 feet wide by 60 feet long. Maybe I'll show it when I'm done. That just said, Ashcroft is watching you. It was in the right after the Patriot Act was passed, and just dropped that. It wasn't like, you know, protest Ashcroft. It wasn't like, let's save civil liberties. It was just simply like, Ashcroft is watching. It's like an Orwellian like allusion to what's really happening right now. And I feel like, especially in this city, in this time, when everyone's so mediated, right, we have to come up with creative ways to kind of break through what people expect, you know? And we took that when it's on a huge Gap billboard. I should show the video. And it was like kind of repurposing advertising for our own means. And I'm going to show the video. Sorry, this is so kind of disorganized. The idea was, you know, again, like, take what people expect and flip it and force it on them. Because in order to like really build any culture change, you can speak, keep speaking to each other, like in this room, keep having conferences and talks, and exciting each other about what we're doing. But to like really engage people outside of ourselves, they kind of have to be forced into it. Ha ha ha.
what our plans to do, but they didn't.
So we get to see all your files.
Yeah.
Got some billionaire action there.
It's like really short flip, but really
it's over.
Did you hear it?
It's a big banner.
I'm going to quit that and go straight to fireworks and rockets. It's like a similar idea, but I think much more interesting. And that was on the 4th of July. Really simple. Got a video projector together, myself on the street. And basically did guerrilla video projection on the 4th of July about the new America, right? It was the war started. People were distracted. Had a huge projection in Queens right under the fireworks show. And it was all video produced online by video from people contributing things from across the country. Ideas that they had of what the new America is, like what this era is we're living in. And in front of this video, we shot in Wall Street, shot in Harlem, shot in Inwood, Queens, Long Island City, Dumbo. We interviewed people asking them, you know, people on the street, like, what do you think the new America is about? What era are we living in? Engaging people directly, and like, and people had to see it. We had this like huge video projector on the street, and, you know, the rest of Wall Street, and like, you know, engaging people in a way that, you know, it wasn't, we weren't protesting, we weren't locked down, we weren't like, you know, shouting like, you know, hell no, we won't go. It's like, what do you think this is about? And how can we, like, work together to, like, make something different? And this, I think, is, like, kind of, and it was so simple and it was really key. I mean, like, people were engaged, people spoke to us. Things like this one guy in Harlem who had this, like, you know, little baby on his shoulder and, like, this projection right across, I live in Harlem, right across my house, in this abandoned building. And the things he said were just so simple, you know, like, this country has forgotten about people like me. In fact, this country has never known people like him, people like a lot of us. We're just trying to, like, raise a kid on next to nothing, have no health care, no benefits. And it was just engaging him in that moment about, like, well, what can we do to, like, make something different, make something better? It wasn't a protest. It was just a simple conversation. And this is how it works. Anybody can do this. It was three pieces of equipment that we took onto this street. What I'm saying is this is a marine battery to be recharged when we need it. It's a power source projector. There's this bag like I have right here. So I'm on the street and you engage hundreds or thousands of people, as many as you want, on the 4th of July. There's a whole lot of people that saw that. And like the biggest thing is like this is really simple. So I have 5 points I want to like discuss, and we'll move on to Callie, who can like kind of go into more detail about push and whatnot. But I have 5 points. I think these points are just like things I've learned. I've tried to like kind of encapsulate like what I've learned over the last like 6 years of doing this. Point number one is this era is incredibly unique, but absolutely not unique at all to anything, right? There's always been people doing countercultural protests. There's always been people trying to engage people ahead of them. You know, from, you know, the Yippies to the Beat to the Tea Party to whatever. There's always been people trying to use creative means to engage people around them and shake them up. So what we're doing is absolutely interesting and absolutely unique to this time. We have a whole new method and means going on, but it's continuing in like a long, long tradition that we're building on. And there's a long tradition of exploitation that we're fighting. And both these things are really kind of important to like just be aware of as you're doing this stuff. Point two, and this is like a really basic thing, the internet, the webernet, the interweb, the info, blah, blah, blah. I don't need to tell you guys this, it's super important. When all you guys go out and do your actions, take a photo, take a video, and put it online. There are people in Tulsa, people in Minneapolis, people in Winnipeg who are going to watch that and see it. And that's what, I mean, like, you do something that's cool and, like, 100 people see and it's great, and you can engage 100 people directly, you put it online, you build your email list, you know, you get, you know, hits and links and blah, 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 it's so simple, and we all know this, but it's so key. The internet makes all this so much more worthwhile, right? Because now you have thousands of people doing it. I get messages from kids in Las Vegas starting their own groups, from kids in Singapore that tell me about the post-production they're doing based on, like, just some random thing that I just made up, dreamed up, went out and did, put online. Well, it took a day. And, like, now, like, thousands of people around the world are, like, doing something similar. And to do, like, the internet stuff, the biggest thing is, like, build an email list. Have your site linked from other sites, but really build your email list. Start to build a crew of people who are, like, kind of watching what you're doing and, like, you know, talk to people. Like, have people link back and forth. I mean, that's, like, what makes this whole thing actually mean something, maybe have an impact. It's not just the action of the moment, but really, like, getting it out there online. Point number three, this is really simple, right? All this shit is really simple. You don't have to, like, sit in your house and dream it up and, like, invent something. What you guys are doing right now, like, some of you guys have little pieces of paper you're writing on. You can make something right now. You can, like, write, at, like, literally right now as you're, like, writing in your scraps of paper, you can, like, just write a thought, post it somewhere, leave it somewhere, put it somewhere where people see it. That's, you know, I don't know what Culture Jam means, but I think that is Culture Jam, right? This is really simple. You can do this right now. I think some of you are doing this right now, right? When you leave here later, you can do it today, you know, you can do it right after the session. You know, all, like, and I think a lot of the story of what this comes from, you know, I'm just like a kid in Sacramento making up shit, and I just, like, go out in the streets and do it. It's all so easy, and sometimes thousands of people follow me. Sometimes it turns out great, sometimes it's tragic. But it's all just really simple. It's just an idea. Right? Is that right in the frame?
I think that was three.
That was three.
You got two more to go.
That's how simple it is. It's not five.
This one was the best.
That was the magic secret
weapon.
Point number four. Engage the people around you. Involve your friends. I mean, like, one thing about doing creative protests, I mean, first of all, I hate the word culture jam. I don't know what that even means anymore. It's about, like, counterculture. It's about, like, shocking people around you. It's just about, like, no definitions. It's bring your friends together. Just do it in a way that makes sense to you, right? Like, the whole other, like, point of complacent.org is about, it's not about changing the world, it's about changing yourself, you know, one complacent at a time. I started this whole project as a personal challenge to myself, a challenge to my friends, a challenge to people closest to me. I put it online and thousands of people got involved, right? But it was, at its core, it's all about, like, trying to shift myself. Because we're not going to change culture. We're not going to cancel the Super Bowl or whatever you want to do, right? Mm-hmm. But you can change your life. Mm-hmm. You can change the life of your friends. And, like, that is super key. So what point number four is really about is you inspire yourself. You inspire five people, right? I mean, there's a room of, like, 50 people or so here. Maybe, like, five of you will be inspired to, and maybe five of you are doing things or whatever to go out and do something new. And you maybe will inspire five other people, right? Just five of your friends inspire five of their friends or five of the people they know or five people randomly on the street. And suddenly there's, like, an exponential, like, kind of growth happen, right? It's really simple. So just engage yourself first, people around you, and put it online, and maybe thousands of people will catch on. Maybe not, it doesn't matter, but it's really about you. Point number five, and this is my last point. And then Callie, who left, so maybe I'll try to extend this out. Point number five is
take your time.
It was the secret one. It was the secret magic, secret sauce.
The five for dramatic effect. Point number five is this is the moment they fear. This right now, this in this room, this conference, you guys, this is the moment they feared. And you're thinking right now, the idea of having this is the moment they feared. Mm. Right? The power, the energy, the, like, the blood, the, like, tick, tick, boom in your veins right now, this is the moment they feared. They want you to watch TV, to ignore the war, to forget, like, the power inside you. This is the moment they feared. Inside of us. 50 people in this room being engaged, walking out of here talking to each other, this is the moment they fear. And they're going to fight you, you're going to get arrested. If you do anything, I think you're going to get arrested. I've been arrested 7 times. This is the moment they fear. When you feel inside yourself,
I can do this, and I don't care if I get arrested, I don't care if I'm broke, I don't care. And if I say anything today, it's about you getting out there, doing something interesting. This is the moment they fear. You turning yourself, you engaging people, right? Start a street party, start a poster project, print some shirts, you know, run down the street screaming something random, meet someone around you, right? This is the moment they fear. Those ideas, that engagement, that's what's going to bring more people into doing more interesting stuff, into doing more and more and more. We might not shift the world, but if we shift ourselves, that is the moment they fear. And it's that simple.
Amen. Well.
So we have Callie, and she's gonna. I'm gonna try to do the computer thing and have her images show.
So, hi. My name is Callie, and I, for the last couple of years, have been sort of doing a body of artwork that goes by the name Swoon, and it's. I'm kind of gonna show you a bunch of pictures that sort of start from the beginning, like when I was making really ugly, weird shit when I was in college and kind of trying to figure out what it was that I was doing and following a lot of blind instincts, and you know, and to sort of bring it around to where I am now and to kind of connect a few different sort of strains of thought. That, you know, which maybe sort of seem kind of separate at first, but which ultimately are kind of connected. It's sort of interesting to be in this room right now because Free 103 is here and Will is here. And these are all people that I, you know, I started, like, putting up stickers my sophomore year of college when I was a painting student. And I really had this moment of being like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this thing? And, of course, all my painting teachers were like, what the hell are you doing and why are you doing this thing? And somehow, one action after another, in the way that your own actions have a momentum that builds, I sort of ended up... I didn't? Oh, shit. Is it a... Should I maybe go after? Because I need to sort of flip through while I talk. Do you want to switch the order?
I can.
Yeah, I'll play with it.
Is
that okay?
Mm-hmm.
You guys? That's fine.
Sorry.
We're awesome.
Hold
that thought.
Yeah, we're just as disorganized as we think.
No, I was getting so intrigued. The breakdown of Gary's tree.
Yeah, I think it is in there.
Yeah. Yeah. We're close, so.
Yeah.
So we're good?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Why don't you guys go and
she'll
figure it
out? Do what? So we're going to lab 2 and 4.
I know, it's because all of our problem solving brains are working on this problem.
Why don't you guys go and then she'll figure out the thing?
Oh, there it is. Looking good. Got a lot of swoon up there.
It's kind of in the wrong order, though, so if you guys want to go ahead, or what do you think? I sort of had like a thought process.
Right.
We'll be happy to just do our thing here. It's impossible to talk with that going on.
Okay, you know what? Yeah. Just okay. So everyone, this will just take.
So we'll just
sorry.
Just wait. For that's fine. We're patient.
Wow, we're all really.
Maybe we can talk.
Yeah.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
So you're telling us, you know, we are the basically the power that can make change, and I agree with that. And my question is, what are we changing and why? And maybe, what are we missing? What do we need to learn about how to, as individuals, you know, as one person, to make a difference? I mean, it seems like we do a lot of things in groups and we get caught. I just came from the collective thing and they were talking about running with their shoes tied together for being a collective, you know, and how do you get things done? You got so many politics and so many things on. I'm all for one person making a difference, and I'm wondering what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, So the first part of your question was, what are we changing and why? I would answer that with, what do you want to change and why? But I think part of what is really interesting about kind of the stuff that all three of us do, and I think a lot of people in this room will do, and hopefully do more, is that it's not specific, like, all the time. Like, sometimes you have really specific campaigns around saving the gardens or around fucking the war or something like that. But that all gets, like, really fucking life draining, right? So there's a lot of opportunity to just try to wake people, shake people, like, excite people. And I think that it's a little harder to justify that because it seems so ephemeral. But it's really, really important still, right? Like, we spent a lot of, you know, I was really involved in that whole RNC movement building thing, right? I set up the website countercrush.org, did a lot of postering, a lot of organizing, which was 5 meetings a week for like 6 months. And it was really great, and totally, like, when the week happened, it was whatever, it was the week. What was really great about that was just engaging the people around me, engaging myself, and, like, having those conversations. Because, you know, we shouldn't be defeated by, like, what we lose, right? We shouldn't be defeated because we didn't stop the war. The war's done, right? About a million people in every street and every city in this country, and the war's still going to happen. But engaging people around you and just starting that process, talking to people, can be really much more worthwhile than, like, stopping the war. And, you know, I mean, the reality is, like, exploitation goes back thousands and thousands of years. So what and why you want to change, it's more just like you taking that action, that simple step, and, like, getting out there. Because there always has to be a counterculture to the mainstream culture. There always has to be, like, a movement to, like, the exploitation. And I think the what, why, and how is really less important than just do that small thing or that large thing, or just do it. So that's my thought. There's quite a lot of other things.
It's a two-part question. One, do you differentiate between art and what you do? Secondly, does calling what you do art or talking about art help you reach a wide public at all, or help you with the public at all?
Actually, I have a really specific answer to that question. I'm not an artist. I'm really specific about that all the time. I'm not contributing to the future of art. I'm not building up art history. I'm exploiting art when I can. And I'm just upfront about that. I'm not an artist. Some people try to call me an artist. Absolutely not. Swoon is an artist. She's amazing. She's building up a long history, and she's contributing to a long future.
But she may want to deny that, too. Are you going to let him call you an artist?
I should not. I'm ready, though.
This is art, right? What I do is exploitation. What I do is I exploit different means, I exploit parties. I throw a lot of parties. I throw parties to get people excited, to raise money for cool shit. I'm not a party promoter. I'm not a party person. I just exploit parties to do more interesting stuff. I exploit art to more interesting things. I exploit advertising things. I exploit the internet. I exploit whatever I can to just, like, be in this room right now to talk to a bunch of people. So I'm not an artist at all. But I say that I'm an artist sometimes, and the cops talk to me. Or when I need to get a space. We're just artists. And, like, the big banner drop we did. Literally, we're on top of a building. It's a 40-foot thing below. The cops are like, come down. We're like, just a minute. We're going to get a video. And we walk down. We're just like, we're just NYU students, artists, and video, blah, blah, blah.
So
I'm really not.
You're wrong.
Right, so you want to go now?
Yeah. I'm really jealous that I don't get to.
We'll do more discussion later, but no.
Yeah, I brought some things. Just take them. I work with a collective called Toy Shop, and we do various projects. And the thing that is being handed out is a sort of a project that's based on hobo signs. And it's I wrote a little thing that's on there. You can read it. It's a sort of, we do kind of various projects that are all about kind of engaging the city in different ways and about kind of, you know, cooperation.
So basically, I'm just going to show you a bunch of images. These are just sort of to introduce my work to you. I'm going to do a bunch of different things, but the main sort of body of work that I've dedicated myself to over the last couple of years is this series of sort of life. Oops. Like life-sized, sort of human-scale portraits that I paced around the city. And it's a funny thing because, you know, I'm here sort of in this, like, cultural jam panel, and nothing that I have ever done has really entered itself kind of into the stream of engaging advertising directly and engaging that language directly and working within that language. Everything that I've done has always been sort of about creating a direct parallel and almost completely ignoring the sort of language and demands of advertising and creating something that exists kind of outside of that. Part of my thinking when I sort of started working this way is I kind of felt that I wanted to work on the street, and I felt that advertising was always asking you for something really specific, and you always kind of know what it is. And even extremely overtly political art, I have the same feeling about that. Like, there's a totally understood relationship between you and that piece of work. It's asking you for something, and you know what it's asking you for. And that creates a kind of a closedness within your relationship to the city. And so I was sort of trying to kind of take up, to infiltrate these various spaces with something that was perhaps a little less clear, and maybe sort of created a sort of like a moment of freedom and a kind of a break with that relationship necessarily. So these are some of the pieces that I've done. I brought one of the pieces, and I will actually show you guys if you want to later on how easy they are to paste up. I brought some tools, I brought some paste, because one of the things that we talked about that we wanted to get through with this sort of workshop was just how easy it is. Like, how everything, like, there's nothing that I do that I don't do in my house. Like, that is a giant woodblock print that I carved on my living room floor and I printed with my feet. Like, you just, I feel like so much of, like, my sort of idea about creating parallel culture is, like, creating it with your own hands. Like, figuring out what you've got, what you can get your hands around, and just do it. And, you know, that's printed on a painter's tarp. You know, those, like, paper tarps that they use. It's an awesome, thin, really cheap, good paper to print on and easy to paste up. So, anyway, here's she was like one of the girls. Did you just catch that? Yeah, isn't that funny?
Oh, yeah, that's a great
I was like, oh yeah, they're going to move. I got her, and she had quite that look. So, this is a piece that I did. I sort of, for some reason, feel I need to talk about this with, like, political work that I don't really ever set out with, like, okay, I'm going to sort of create something on this subject, but because so much of my work is so sort of internal that whatever you're thinking about is going to come out. So I actually had a moment with this where I stepped back and I was like, oh, I didn't even realize that those forms and these forms were sort of, like, colliding to create this image. So anyway, I find that there's a certain kind of a politics to... Well, you know, I mean, to basically saying this property is not private property, this property is public property, and all these things. So anyway, I don't know. I don't really know what I'm saying about the sort of politics or lack thereof of the work that I've been doing. This one is a cut piece of paper. I work in a few mediums, cut paper, linoleum block printing. Okay, here I am with the ugly college work. So basically, I studied classical painting, and then I sort of weirded out at some point and just, like, wanted to make something that a little bit more kind of, like, directly impacted my own life and sort of made itself a part of the city. And so I started making these wacky little stickers and sticking them everywhere. And of course, my painting teachers were like, what the hell is that? And then I was making these really ugly posters, and I adopted a name, which my friend kind of dreamed up for me, and I sort of took because I thought it was ridiculous. I was like, ah, swoon, that's true. I would never have a graffiti name, that's silly. But then I got kind of into it, and it became really giant, and it was a really big part of my work for a while, and I was doing these little poster collages, and then I became really obsessed with how to take over various spaces in the city. So I was like, get into the bus shelters, you know, take an Allen wrench and, like, take the base off of the lamppost base, take it home and paint it. You know, billboards, how easy is that? 5-foot roll of Steinreiter's Bond, paint it, wallpaper, paste it up with a stick. Here's a shot of my friend helping me. Pretty easy, standing on a dumpster. You can pretty much do it from ground level. Here's a newspaper box that I wheeled away on a dolly, and then I took it home and gave away free stuff out of it. And this is actually where I met Will and where I met the 3103 guys, because around about this time that I was sort of trying to infiltrate every space that I could, I found that I started to ask sort of more and more questions. Like, you're kind of going, okay, bus shelters, ad spaces, advertising, sort of private property, what do all these things mean? And then I was going, well, what about, like, radio waves? And what about the uses of the streets? And what about all these things? And I wasn't really aware of this whole Reclaim the Streets culture. I was totally, like, just coming at this from a very kind of narrow perspective. And I went to Will, and I was like, hey, I want to throw this street party. And he was like, this is easy. We know how to do this. And I went to 3103, and I was like, I want to have this pirate radio broadcast off this rooftop, and we're going to have, like, this mobile sound system, whatever. And we sort of organized this very weird, small little street party with the help of a bunch of people. And through that action and through these kinds of actions of, you know, getting a bunch of friends together and changing all the ads in the subway, here we are standing on chairs, pulling the plastic out, I found that collective action, don't cut yourself doing that, I found that collective action is really powerful, and I found that all of these things which didn't necessarily seem connected to me at first, like, okay, a radio broadcast versus a sticker, all really were connected in this way of, like, just being active citizens and, like, physically changing your city and being like, this is my space and I want to push against the current. I don't want to only be a receptor, you know. And so sort of starting with that street party, I started working with a collective, and this is an action that we did where part of the thing that I feel about doing posters and stuff is it's not just about me being like, oh, here's my art. Everybody has to look at it on this wall. It's also about sort of through your action opening up a space and saying, hey, look, I declared, like, fucking free open zone on this wall, and we can all participate in this. Because once you move that boundary of, like, private property not to be interfered with, you know, I mean, everyone sees it happen. As soon as the first tag goes up, it's sort of just like, you know, it's a sort of, anyway, open season is declared on that wall. So I was thinking, like, what are some ways that I can sort of show that it's not just about me and my artisanship, it's about sort of creating a participatory environment. And so this is the thing where we went to the park with a giant roll of paper and a bunch of pens and stuff, and all the kids, just like little zombies, came over and just started drawing all over everything. And then we put them into the billboard spaces in the neighborhood. And then we also were doing kind of street party wacky stuff. This was one where I'm sort of interested in how you can, like, recycle the detritus of the city and the garbage and the junk and sort of remake it into fun things. And so we made this junk band, basically, like a couple hundred instruments. This is a giant xylophone made out of pipes and bike wheels. And a couple hundred people came, and we handed them all out, and it was just this huge, crazy, like, sound mob riot. And we just kind of, like, wound our way through the Lower East Side, and people, like, came out of bars, like, what the hell are you doing? And came with us, and that was fun. And, okay, now I'm back to just my own kind of visual work and, like, how that process started. So, this is also around about the time of that street party. I think we put this work up because we were that first street party I was telling you about, because we were trying to sort of decorate the neighborhood. And I found that I liked cutting paper and that it was really cheap and really easy and you could make multiples. And so I made these bugs. And then I made, this is the first one I put up. I made this full figure. I had no idea what I was doing. I put it up totally crooked and messed up. And then here's me once I've got the hang of it. I'm going to go back. A little bit more getting the hang of it. Anyway, this was just sort of the thought process as it went from kind of these small posters and these stickers and these news boxes to sort of finally hitting on something which felt kind of important to me. That's a picture of my little brother on the Berlin Wall. He thought that was totally funny. This is the wall I did in Dumbo. I sort of found, like, through years, really, of working in this manner and of honestly following myself pretty blindly and not totally understanding why I was doing or what I was doing it, I started to sort of evolve a way of working which had a lot to do with kind of trying I don't know, there's this book I just read, which I feel like I need to just give credit to him for saying this, because he said it so much better than I can say it right now. This guy, John Berger, is an art critic, and he wrote this book called The Shape of a Pocket. And he says this thing which is really important, which is that empathy and compassion and, like, human connection are one of the very few things in life that are totally outside of the system of, like, dog-eat-dog commerce. Mm-hmm. There's just no place for it. And so any time that you can have, like, a moment of stillness and of connection with another human being, if you can create that in the kind of crazy flow of, like, this capitalist society, then you can, you create a little pocket, you create a little moment of resistance, you create a little space of freedom for something else. And so I kind of slowly came around to trying to make something like that through these portraits that I paste up madly all over the place. And this I am showing you because this is one of my linoleum box. And those are my little cutters on the ground. And I soften it with an iron in case anyone wants to make big linoleum prints. It's really much easier if you soften it with an iron and then cut it. And let me see. And here it is on the wall. And here's the wood block. I cut that one with a Dremel. It's also easier on the hand. And here is that one over there, which I will give a pacing demonstration of later. This is her in the process of being cut.
That's linoleum?
That's linoleum, yeah. And let me see. Oh, and then some more pirates. I guess I didn't put them in exact order. This was a kind of a joke where I think we were trying to decide where to take the junk band to, and someone said, "All right, we'll take it to the Staten Island Ferry and tell them, we ain't paying you no fees, take this boat to Staten Island," and something piratey, and that happened. I'm showing you this picture because I'm sort of trying to, like, expose working processes, and these are a few pictures that I took when I was in Buenos Aires, which then became part of that piece over there. So a lot of people ask, like, where do you get your inspiration? What are you working from? And basically, I just take billions of pictures. I just walk around and take pictures, and I work from my photographs. Mm-hmm. And this is the junk band, and I'm just kind of showing this because I feel like there are various ways of dealing with the police, and tutus, there is one, I think. I was wearing only newspaper. I nearly lost. I nearly was naked by accident. And here's me, I took a picture of myself dressing as construction. I was real convincing, right? But it sort of worked in my favor in that I got flirted with by every policeman on the street. And so I kind of, like, even though no one believed that I was a construction worker, everyone was like, "Hey, honey, nice toolbox." So, just, like, as far as, like, ways of coping and doing, that was a good one. And that's it. I'm done.
No, we can do it. Yeah. Yeah, it's a great photo.
No,
thank you, Kelly. Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So
we're the next people to have the microphone aimed at us. Seems like it's broken here.
Just talk loud, Billy.
Talk loud? Preach, Amy?
So, we had kind of a more organized format, but we're going to abandon that pretty immediately, I think. And
well, there's so much overlap with our two predecessors here.
We said so much of what we wanted to say that I think we can just move right on to a practical discussion of the action we're going to do following this workshop.
Will you join us? The Starbucks?
The Shoplift.
It's called The Shoplift. Kind of a homage to Abby Hoffman there, steal this book. At 14th Street, just about three quarters of an avenue up on the downtown side of the street. Our idea of grassroots media, we share much with with these two, the we really have a belief in the micro gesture, the media of talking and listening, the media of gesture and seeing.
We have a very reductive view of space. So we do a lot of work inside of transnational chain stores. So as opposed to being out on the street, we go into stores and do work. And we work in a very small space there about gesture and broken gesture and volume and content. So it's really those three things.
And the fact is, well, we both have a theater background and share a feeling of victimization by our art form. The art question over here. We also we love to deny that we're artists, but the there's nothing quite as theatrical in my experience as a there's nothing as charged as a human violation of a transnational chain store.
Yeah.
Some fun that we hope you will have with us right after we, you know, march off together here tonight. The Starbucks company, and this feeds right into the practical action that we're going to suggest. The Starbucks company is very adept at if there's one of you here taking notes for Starbucks right now, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Very adept at this sort of thing.
Right, they are the culture jammers.
They're the culture jammers. That's actually why we want to leave that phrase behind. They do it better than anybody else. They, for instance, in the Western Highlands of Guatemala, where the ratio between a doctor and the people there in the coffee growing regions is 85,000 to 1. The very high mortality rates among children, 70 out of 1,000 are dead by the age of 5.
And yet, very, very Laurie Anderson can have an interview in the New York Times.
Oh, can't you leave Laurie alone?
In which she said she's sitting at the Starbucks and remarks inside the interview how much she likes Starbucks. So, Laurie Anderson, the musician, you know, the
sexual artist.
Who's Laurie Anderson? Hallelujah!
The artist, Laurie Anderson.
She's sponsored by BAM, which is financed by Philip Morris Cigarettes. So leave Laurie alone, my God. So the Starbucks, we discovered when we're in contact with the people in the coffee growing regions of southern Mexico and Guatemala, and we talk to these people, sometimes directly, sometimes through Global Exchange or other nonprofits who have monitors in the fields. When we talk to them, they will tell us about how Starbucks actually finances studies of conditions there. And we've discovered that these studies that they finance are very old, and that in fact what they are is stalling. They get into the process, they have the most money, they get into the process, they hire the professors and the scientists, they hire the people that go and interview the families in the fields, the 6, 7, 8-year-old kids who are inhaling the pesticides, and they get the data, and then the data doesn't come out. You can find it on the internet. And I'll tell you right now where to find it. Coverco is the name of the study that is the best study of conditions in the non-fair trade certified, in the wild west of the collapsed coffee market, just very close to us here. Howard Schultz isn't Coverco, C-O-V-E-R-C-O, Coverco. You can Google Coverco or Coverco.org. We'll take you right there to this study. The study actually has Starbucks money involved in the study. Now you talk to the people who did the study, and they say, yeah, we've done this study for years. It's you know, we had hope that something would happen as a result.
So all of these things, say all of this, is to demonstrate that when you go in a transnational store, we're always trying to get people to just basically recognize labor history and resource history of products. We're just operating within that relationship, a person to a product. What do you see when you see a product? Do you see simply the product, or do you see its labor and resource history? And how often? Obviously, we can't do that with every single product every minute of every day. But to intentionally go in and do that, you start breaking up the rote gesture of shopping. That's certainly what we want to do today at Starbucks, and it's what we want to do every day at Starbucks, and we hope you want to do it every day at Starbucks. Now, some of you might wonder, well, why Starbucks? I mean, lots of people have coffee that isn't fair trade, etc. Well, we choose Starbucks because they are so sophisticated, because they actually do use our tools. They are culture jammers. They manage somehow to convince the world that they are a green, liberal company with progressive values and good labor practices. That's bullshit, and we all know that. Now you know that.
Global Exchange last week, and I said, what is the percentage, after all these years of Starbucks having all these happy peasants pictures on their bags of beans and their little Earth Tony brochures? It's been going on for years, and it's a general impression, even among many liberals, that this is somehow a green, quote-unquote, green company. And they said, we think that their percentage of fair trade certified coffee is 2% of their worldwide sales. It's been going on for 10 years now.
And this is a very clear case.
It's advertising. They're saying their fair trade coffee is basically in their advertising budget.
Exactly. And they have a billionaire CEO. But it's important. It's important because I think one of the things you have to do is choose a target that makes sense.
Choose your double.
And we've chosen Starbucks for these reasons, but also because it's owned by one man. I mean, there are shareholders in it, but it's not a franchise the way, say, Dunkin' Donuts, equally egregious in many ways, but often owned by someone in your neighborhood, right? It's very different than Starbucks. There's a billionaire CEO at the head of Starbucks, and children dying in coffee fields at the bottom. So for us, it's a very clear example of globalization, of wage inequity. I mean, right? So that's why we choose Starbucks.
And it's such a clear demonstration of this disease we have in this culture, which is that we depoliticize products. We walk by them and we don't think they have a past. We don't think they have a past. We're Americans, aren't we? Just what Will said. Well, Callie and Will both said it. We don't think it. There's nothing behind it. It's there. It's just, it arrived from nowhere. It arrived from entitlement. It never got there from anywhere. So that feeds right into the
to the action itself.
So now we've noticed. I've lived in New York only 12 years, although this is the third time I've lived here. I've always come back all my life to this place. I love New York.
Yay, New York!
I love New York. And one of the reasons I love New York is how people talk and listen to each other. Some of the remarkable conversations that I get into in this place. Amen? Hallelujah?
Hallelujah.
And, I've noticed that in transnational chain store, there's generally a kind of... Do you agree with me, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
There's a sort of hush. Am I right? There's a sort of hush in a Duane Reade. There's a sort of... That it might not exist in a pharmacy that is run by two people that have been there for 30 years. You know what I mean? There's a kind of non-conversation that takes place, and a tremendous growth of fluorescent, bright, celebrity packaging force, you know, rising up and replacing what was... Can I say another kind of media? What was grassroots media? And the people...
Right? Talking and listening.
Talking and listening.
The most basic kind of media there is, talking and listening. We just want to start there.
Yeah. Jazzy, sassy, gossipy, lying, describing,
interrupting,
funky talk, letting dream fragments come up, just getting into, talking yourself into a corner.
Asking why.
Embarrassing yourself. In the Church of Stop Shopping, we have something called the state of exalted embarrassment. It's time to get embarrassed again.
Right.
Amen. Callie, will you both embarrass us? You're embarrassing us. You're an embarrassment. You're an embarrassment. You're not polite. You're not civil.
I'd like to just take it back a tiny bit, though, and say one thing, which is I think it's really important at this point to really understand the territory you're fighting for or against. I think a lot of times these movements end up being a battle over a boundary or a line, and so we end up in face-offs with police, with authorities of various kinds, with each other even, over a line, a simple line. So what Billy and I talk about a lot, what our community of people talk about a lot, is how to lift that line off the ground, actually. Lift that line off the ground and put it in a place where it's actually a useful line to try and cross. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's an idea that we call the commodity wall, and I know lots of people have other names for that, but it's the membrane that really exists between us here in the consumer world and the people and the land that exists where those things come from. So that's the boundary that we want to be engaging with, not a line about whether I can walk there or protest there or stand there, or that's just over, right? We have to go to this other, more dimensional, much more complicated, harder to negotiate, and very often invisible line that exists inside a product, right? So that's what we do. Mm-hmm. That's where our work resides. And that's what we want to do at Starbucks. So let's talk about the action.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have a blackboard. It's so hard not to get up on the blackboard and do, like, the general thing.
Right.
I'm not going to. No, I don't want to.
Kelly.
I don't
want
to.
I
have
Kelly's a
no, it's okay.
Shovel person.
I would just draw a square. So
we have Kelly on the blackboard.
I recognize it. It's okay. I don't want to honor those militaristic urges.
Just so you guys know, right? This whole panel is set up. We spoke a lot. This is all about getting you guys in the streets, and that's what we're going to do next. So we're going to talk right now about action you guys are going to do right now today. We're going to watch Callie put up a poster. You'll see how simple it is, so you can do it on your own at home. And we're going to do this action, all of us together, right now, today, right? So what I was talking about, we're doing this right now. This is happening right now, and you guys can come with us.
Okay.
Let's hear the action.
Okay, so, all right, so you just have to imagine the Starbucks, and then you imagine everything inside the Starbucks just lifted. So just slightly separated from its surrounding, you know? So, Billy, you want to talk about it because it was the dream you had.
Well, the... It's called Shoplift. And
I love it. We all know how to do that.
I can feel the presence of shoplifters in this room. I know that some of this clothing. I know you know who you are. The first thing I'd like to do is actually lift. Go and address a part of the Starbucks. And in this first part of the action, we're surveilled, of course, and security people and staff wonder about us because there'll probably be a larger number of us than they expect. But we're a little bit under the cover of a role which is called consuming. And they don't know yet that we won't buy, right? So, but come in, we'll kind of lengthen out and come in gradually and pick a chair, a piece of trash, a cup, pick a bag of beans, of course, with the happy peasant on it, pick a brochure. We consider everything in there a product. Everything in there has a cost. Everything in there has a past. And so that first lifting, when you've decided on your object, we would like you to lift it this way. We would like you to go back in time and just make up a story where you go back to its being handed there, put there, arranged by union busted $7.18 an hour workers. Then you see it coming in a box, right? And you see it in the truck, and you see the driver in the truck. And sometimes it's easier to do everything backwards. A talent that we have from this generation of being able to control imagery forward and back. You can have the truck go backwards to a warehouse. You can have people unload it and walk backwards into forklift trucks, go backwards. You can have a bigger truck drive backwards out of that gathering area to a ship or an airplane or if it's paper, if it's the brochure, then you have to be a little creative here. Yeah, you go back to a forest.
You go back to where
it's from. If you're on coffee beans, then you'll end up probably in Guatemala or in Colombia or southern Mexico.
And what's great is that if you don't know what that picture looks like, just look at the walls of Starbucks with all those smiling people. Right? It gives you a pathway to get there.
you can look at the smiling people and take our word for it. We've done the research. They're not smiling. So just look at them. Take off the smile and you're pretty much home.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway,
here's the product.
All right.
Ready?
But if it's plastic, would we be going back to like
oil underneath?
Oil. Very good. Thank you.
Exactly. It used to be a tree, maybe. We don't know.
Or dinosaur.
Dinosaur. Okay, Billy, ready?
Okay, so on this chair has been my product. Savitri is our action manager, and she plays with her hair, clears her throat or something, wants to figure out.
Usually my signal is this.
She has a hair
fetish. I take my hair and I kind of...
I think you best start signaling.
And that's when we begin.
That's the cue to move to
the unison.
To the second step.
Yeah.
The second step, this is where you lift... the object.
When she shakes her head, yes. Yeah.
And I'll do it for a while.
she might place herself out on the sidewalk. She'll place herself in a place where we can all see her. And it's not a hard border. It's not, the step doesn't have to be synchronized necessarily that strictly, because you should be, if you're engaged in your imaging, then you should. And you have a way to go, you should continue. Mm-hmm. Those of you who are ready to move on to the next lift is a physical lift. And this is what we call the curse.
This is synchronized cursing.
Synchronized cursing. And this is, I'll just give you an example of one that I made up this morning on the airplane flying in from Cleveland, okay? They have Starbucks in Cleveland. I curse. I defeat the distance between where I am right now and where this chair is from. And I invite the person, and I invite the people that made this chair to curse that distance with me. I want us both to defeat that distance together. I want us both to be standing here in this Starbucks, and I want to be standing in that coffee field, in that chip factory, in that aluminum. I have to tell you the story that I created now, right? Using your own text now. I want to be with that wonder in that place and share this curse together. Because if we can defeat this globalized economy that has separated us from each other, then I will not consume and he, she will not work in quite the same way. Let's work together and let's consume together, and I believe that when we work together and consume together, it won't be the same kind of work, and we probably won't call it consumption at that point. Amen.
Relate to something Will and Holly said too.
Your arms get sore.
One of the first things that Will said, he used the word sincere, talking about effort in his attempt to engage within culture, right? And Kelly was talking about this book about empathy and compassion existing outside of the market. And I think it's really important always to remind ourselves of those things. I don't think you can say it enough, that compassion and empathy, in these circumstances especially, actually set us free over and over again. And they do connect us to other people, even if those people are working too hard to get the brain vibe, you know what I'm saying? But I think in this action, ultimately, you know, that's just how Billy curses.
And but this should be a compassionate Billy, curse.
That's how Billy
This should be a real curse.
I
should be sincerely involved
like
in this curse.
And all I need to say is that, you know, if your curse is a silent curse, the most important thing is that you mean the curse. The curse will carry. You know, that's more important than the performance of the curse, I think. You know, some people might disagree, but I don't know what about. So, it's step one is identifying the product. Step two is making the story with the product. Step three is listing the product and cursing the product. And I want to say that all those things are completely parallel to an actual consumer experience. So it really is. A normal narrative would go, oh, there's this coffee bean. And a story you write is, I want those. Okay? Which is a really boring, not interesting, not really nourishing story. So the story that you're going to tell about where it's from is much more compelling, I think. So I just want to point that out. So you have the counter narrative, which is about the real thing. So normally you would take the product up, we're going to do that, and then you would buy it. So instead of buying it or cursing the distance, I just want, as we do it, we be aware of this parallel story. That all over the city today, people are actually doing the other story. They're seeing it, wanting it, buying, leading with it, you know, and just, we're going to go in and just do this other story. Okay.
Are we supposed to do it all at once?
Yeah, we're going to do it all at once. So at one moment, actually, the whole store
should
be...
everything in the store should be up in the air. Everything. Chairs, tables, bags of beans. Everything should be lifted that is loose, you know.
Now, it's important to
napkin know holders.
This is a very popular Starbucks. It is bound to be very crowded. Obviously, we don't want to upset the people who work there. I mean, I just want to say to them, this isn't about you. You know, that's always, it's not about the people who work there. You know, they're in it too.
That's what people say, lovers who say when they're breaking your heart, they always say, this isn't about you.
Yeah, I was just alone.
I just love this other person.
So, it was a question.
None. It's zero.
The rest of it. If you're not comfortable,
stop doing it, and no one will know that you're doing it.
I think we're ready to go. We're out of time. If you're not comfortable coming with us, don't come.
Poster on the way.
But we'll
poster on the way.
We're going to do question and answers on the street on the way there. Right? This isn't about us. It's about you. Discussion, question, answer. We're going to talk. We're going to watch Callie come with us.
What?
Oh, me too.
Yes. I mean, not really. No, I mean, I don't. I mean, how are you? I mean, you're going to get dirty.
I'm so
dirty right now. I have that phone. Hi.